Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Microbrands.
Lunch with Norm.
All right, we're broadcasting live on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. So if you are watching this on a replay, skip ahead. And if you want to, if you're watching this on my personal Facebook page, you can always pop over to the official Norm Farrar, aka Lunch with Norm, and you'll find a lot more content, highlights, and other video clips. So, Squire, where are you?
Here.
Okay, what should people do?
All right, as always, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We are an official podcast, so Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can find us all on Lunch with, if you search Lunch with Norm. And we have a website, lunchwithnorm.com. All of the bios, descriptions, show notes, they'll be provided there. If you're interested in like the full clips, the highlights, you can always find it on the Norm Farrar YouTube page too.
Yes, and we do have that newsletter I'd always like to talk about, because the newsletter provides all sorts of content from the industry, not just Amazon, but with digital marketing, social media, other forms of online content, drop shipping, you name it, it's on the newsletter. And I promise you, the newsletter doesn't suck. So that being said, unless you have anything else to say, Kels.
We're excited for today's episode. Hit those like buttons, share the video. It does it all good for us.
Like last time, right? I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah,
smash those like buttons. That's it. I'm getting into this. Yeah, okay. Cool. All right. So today I have a special guest. He's a guest, he's a friend, and he's also a business partner in Hona Worldwide. Afalabi Oyurkun is a sourcing expert, and we met up about a year ago and decided that we should get together and do some work together. So he is the co-founder of Hona Worldwide, and it's a global product sourcing and logistics company. Afalabi has always been passionate about finding things. Like, he haggles, he negotiates, he haggles, he negotiates, but he always finds the product. He does it in a very special way. Actually, that's why I've been in the sourcing business for 20 years. And when we started talking, he blew me away with some of the techniques that he had. So he has helped 7- and 8-figure businesses, as well as he has his own 7-figure Amazon business brand that he has on Amazon. So remember, if you have any questions, just shoot them over and we will definitely get to them. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. Hey, buddy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. So this good. Is my business partner, Afalabi.
Hi, everyone.
So it's not like we're going to be biased on this podcast, right? So hey, Afalabi, why don't you just tell everybody just a bit about your background, and then we'll get into learning the art of negotiating.
Awesome. Thanks, Norm, for having me on the show. This is really cool. Well, a little bit about myself. Several years ago, right out of college, you know, I was designing shoes, and I didn't have anybody to help me out to source the shoes. So I ventured into it by myself. Those are the days of dial-up internet. I went online and found me a supplier in Taiwan. You know, he said, you have to come down. So I was like, why can't we do it over the internet? He's like, no, you have to come down. So I flew to Taiwan and we developed the shoes. And long story short, we launched the shoes on Amazon, actually. Amazon had invited me to sell the shoes there. And it was going good until I realized that the shoes were all made wrong. And I had to sell off the whole business and the whole inventory because I just couldn't bear the pain of people returning the shoes. And so I lost almost everything and I was so down. But something good came out of it. People started asking me, how in the world did you build your shoes? How did you do it? So I started to help companies and individuals and, you know, entrepreneurs source their products from then on. And that's how I came to where I am today. No. I think you're mute.
There we go. I didn't want to interrupt you, see? So I don't know if I ever told you this, but my dad was in the shoe industry.
Wow.
And one of the things that I was going through as I was going to be a shoe designer.
Uh-oh.
So we were in the same field, very brief, but yeah, for years I was working in my dad's factory designing, believe it or not, counters, which are the hard part in the back of the shoes.
Oh, wow.
And I was trying to get an apprenticeship over at Clark Shoe over in the UK.
Wow.
But that's enough about me. Let's get into negotiating.
Good.
All right, sir. You're on the firing line.
Awesome.
Okay. All right. So where do you think we should start here? I mean, is it what's the difference between trying to negotiate the lowest price versus the best price? I think that's really important.
It is. And many sellers, entrepreneurs, they make the same mistake every time. Dealing with China for over 20 years, I've learned my lessons that the lowest price is not always the best price. And people make these mistakes all the time. I would say the best price, the definition of a best price, is the lowest price I can get the best quality. And it happens, it's possible to get the best price, but don't always go for the lowest price. People make this mistake. They keep trying to push their suppliers down for pricing and pricing. Guess what? Especially in China, they know how to get you. These suppliers know how to get you. If you're bidding the prices down and down and down and you're sacrificing your quality, you're going to get burned at the end of the game. So I would go for best price, not lowest price, any day, anytime, because that's when you get the best quality for the best price.
I have to say, one of my favorite people have just tuned in. Oksana, how is it in Prague today? Thank you for watching. That was a surprise. Yes, I have to agree. And, you know, we get that all the time. Like, people will try to come and, okay, if they're at $1.50, even when we meet $1.50, people say, oh, can you get it to $1.45? Or can you get it to $1.30? And yeah, we could definitely do it, but it's going to be taken from either the quality of the product or the quality of the service.
Yes.
So where are you going to jeopardize? And then the other thing, so how do I do this without, I do not want to identify. The other thing that happens is it's just not about numbers. So when you're going out there and you're negotiating, like one of the things that you can do when you're having at least the sourcing company take a look at the numbers, you have to know what the product that you're looking like. You have to put it all in perspective. Mm-hmm. So some sourcing companies right off the bat, when you're looking at negotiating, they'll either have no charge for you them to go out and source the product. They'll have a small charge. They'll have a percentage at the back end. One way or the other, you're paying for the sourcing company.
Yes.
And I know that, again, built into the negotiation that we work, we say, okay, you know, we're 5%. So there's a flat fee up front and then there's 5% ongoing. And then, like, we'll have people come in and say, well, we've negotiated with, you know, another platform that's going to do it at 4%. Well, you don't know what the price is yet. Yeah, but they're going to do it at 4%.
Yes.
I mean, it happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, you've got to take that all into consideration, because if the company that's going to go in at 5% can save you $2 and the guy that's going to come in at 3.5% can save you 25 cents, there's still, yeah. Yeah, and also it's the quality of what you're getting for that. So let's just go back a bit more just to the actual negotiation. So one of the things that I think we should talk about is when you go to the big sourcing platforms, we all know where they are. You start, you know, on the big sourcing platforms and everybody goes there because it's easy. Now, are you stuck with that price? How do you negotiate your price on those large sourcing platforms?
Well, and like you said, there's really nothing wrong about the sourcing platforms.
Right.
It's the people you deal with on the sourcing platform that takes a little maneuvering and a little cultural skill to really deal with them to get what you really want. Because you're dealing with different cultures, you're dealing with language barriers, you're dealing with so many things. And some of the things you have to consider is when you're dealing on sourcing platforms, you have to know that your profile can be seen by these suppliers and factories or the brokers or the middleman. And the way, once you send an inquiry, they already could see your transaction history. They can see where you're coming from, maybe what country you're coming from. And it could be good and it could be bad, but it just depends on what kind of people or what kind of suppliers are seeing your profile. And they're going to respond to you based on your profile, the kind of pricing you're going to get, the kind of negotiation you're going to be able to do will be based on that initial perception of you.
So it's an unspoken rule, isn't it, that foreigners will basically pay their tax based on where they are?
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. And the other thing that we should take a look at too, so where you can save money right off the bat, when you don't know how many layers of brokers that you're dealing with. Ideally, you're dealing with a broker. Now, a broker is not a bad name. It's not a bad word. A broker basically is representing, a broker represents a manufacturer. Most manufacturers in China don't speak English. So the broker helps with sales support with the manufacturer. The other thing that I'm not sure if you know about, but most manufacturers don't have export licenses. So the broker steps in. Now, where there's a problem with brokers is when one broker sells to another that sells to another, and all of a sudden you've got this gang of brokers that you have no idea who you're buying from. The other thing, Afolabi, like when you're dealing with certain brokers, and I have people that are adamant that they're buying 100 units to 250 units of this huge factory that's probably worth 25 million, 100 or 50 million or whatever they're doing in annual sales, and they think they're dealing with the owner. Mm-mm. It's not happening, right?
No.
Yeah. And you can argue all day long, and it's just that people don't really realize. But when you peel back the layers, I think that's the first start of negotiation, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. And that's the toughest part of it, because it's layers. Once you start peeling the layers to get to the real factory, and then to get to the real factory owner, that's when there are six, it could be almost six deep of pricing right there that you're going to enjoy because you're going deeper. But as a foreigner or a foreign company, that your chances of getting there is, it's very low.
Right.
Unless, you know, you're using, you have a Chinese-speaking people on staff that really know international trade, not just any sales rep that came out of college in China. They've got to know the real international trade, how the whole thing works. Because from the very beginning, the moment you click the button to get an inquiry about a product, that will determine if you lose your negotiation games or not. Because it starts before they even reply your inquiry to know if you've won or if you've lost that.
Okay, very good. So just a couple of shouts out here to, oh, wow, all the way from Tahiti. Mabruk, how are you? Alan Muir, hey, how's it going? And Tony, Toronto, I know you're from Toronto, Tony. How's it going? All right. So, yeah, it is important. Now, how many, a lot of people will go to one factory and they think it's solid. How many factories do you try to get people to go to? Like, should they go to multiple? Is there a number?
I'll say five. 3 to 5 is good.
What happens if you have a really tough product? And maybe there's a product like a cat bed that's got some funky design patent on it. What happens then?
If you have a tough product, first you have to find the factory that specializes in this product. You cannot go after a factory that says, oh, we can do that too. It's got to be the exact factory that specializes in your kind of product. There may not be a lot of them. So sometimes you may be lucky. You can get 2-3 factories that specializes in this product. Then you work with them with getting their samples, looking at the workmanship, the craftsmanship of how they do their products. If you discover that they're C-level factory, but you want to do an A-level product, then you know that factory is not for you. You cannot expect an A-level or premium grade from a C-level factory. So those are some of the things you have to consider, especially if you have a very unique product that has never existed before.
Right. So doing a factory audit.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So the other thing I look at too is, let's say that I always like using the plastic shoe stretcher. So you go and there's 7 people selling the exact same plastic shoe stretcher. What do you think, like right off the bat, if you see somebody selling multiple products on Amazon, should they invest in doing product development to be, and again, this is only if the search volume's there, the competition is there, and the pricing is there, right? But should people invest in developing the product one step further, getting some product development done?
If the product is already existing all over, I would say it's better to have a unique advantage and invest in a unique advantage. Let's say you're putting your own spin on it, or you're doing something a little different on your own, then it's better. If not, then you're just going to be trying to swim in a whole pool full of sharks or people. I mean, it's already oversaturated. Unless you put your own spin into a product.
Okay. You sat down with me and you said, this is the way that I negotiate with my supplier. Let's go through the 5 or whatever it is, the steps. How do you start the negotiation?
The first thing is, I break negotiations into 3. Even though I know people always go for price negotiations and stuff, but there is price negotiations, there is terms negotiations, and there is quality negotiations. People always focus on the price part, but I think all those 3 negotiation types are very important, and you'll see why. So the first thing is to set up your profile right, or you approach the your supplier in the right way, which is, once you approach them as a foreigner, it's going to be a little harder. Your chances of winning your negotiation games is a little slimmer. That's why we go around the back, or we put our foot on the ground to actually go to this factory physically to do our sourcing. Or we speak Chinese, you know, we have Chinese-speaking staff that would go in and do all the sourcing. This way, I will not get tagged as a foreigner. That's the first thing in the negotiation. And then the second thing will be, you have to go to a supplier that specializes in your product. Because the difference between a supplier that is trying to do your product as a new product that they're not so used to is, you're going to pay a lot of money in developing that product from this supplier because they're not skilled. They don't have expertise in how to develop it. And the second thing is, their prices will come up way higher than everybody else. And that's one of the ways you can tell if a supplier is well-versed in your product or not. When you get prices from 5 different suppliers, and one supplier is $6 and everybody else is $3, $3.50, $3.15, $3.80, And he's like $6. You can tell that he's not experienced. He's just wanting to get your product so that he can get into that product line.
Hey, Afolabi. Uh-huh. I got one thing to add, and sorry for interrupting. You can interrupt me anytime, okay?
Nope.
But the other thing, when you're, and this is when you're on the Alibaba platform, or primarily Alibaba. So if you're looking for a product, one of the things that you can make sure that you're getting, well, at least closer to the manufacturer, is typically the city where the product is being manufactured mm-hmm. is at the front. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the other things is you can always go to a map of China and see, you know, what products are produced in what areas, what specialty mm-hmm. products. Mm-hmm. And then if the kind of the two add up, that's great. Or if you see that there's, let's say there's one name that's constantly coming up and then you see these stragglers, you can check and see pretty much, pretty easily, whether it's a broker or not. One of the ways that you can do this is you can go in and you can just see what products they're selling.
Yep.
And if they're similar, right? So if you're selling plastic shoe stretchers and wooden shoe stretchers and this shoe stretcher and that shoe stretcher, or a line of plastic products, okay, this could be the manufacturer or the broker to the manufacturer that's mm-hmm. in this specific area that mm-hmm. lines up with the city that makes mm-hmm. these types of products. Mm-hmm. But so many times you can say, oh, this doesn't make sense. Like, red flag goes up. You go and you can check and see if they're making tin cans and they're making plastic shoe stretchers. Oh, by the way, they're distributing candies. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, you know that this is a broker. So that, sorry for interrupting, but that's just a quick tip for Alibaba.
Yeah, that's a tip that they're a broker. It also means that they don't specialize in anything.
Right.
And when they don't specialize, that means they're not going to know a lot about your product. So there is a product broker and there is a product developer. Those things are very different. Some people will come up with product ideas and you give it to a broker and they're struggling to get it because they don't really have product development background. They don't have, they don't understand the anatomy and the engineering behind your product because they sell or they broker so many products. So they don't really master in anything, or it's hard for them to understand the concept that you're bringing in. So you need a combination of both sourcing and product development to be able to get the best pricing as well. Because some people come to us and say, oh, I want to do this product. And I say, look, yeah, I can get you this product, but have you considered changing your material to this material? And they were like, what do you mean by that? I said, well, this product is actually going to be stronger and better if you use this material as opposed to using the material you were thinking of using. What about adding this feature or adding that feature into the product? So that is product development. So many of the people you're going to see on the platforms, they may not be able to help you with that.
Right.
Unfortunately, it would affect your price as well, and it would affect the quality at the end of the day.
Right. So, oh, here's a big question. Okay, so Afolabi or Kelsey, I'll let you read that thing.
So Andrea says, hello from Seattle. I'm currently trying to get a custom product manufactured, so I need molds, rapid prototype, and then injection molding done. We use PVC in the 3D printing that we did, but considering ABS or PP for the go-to market product, having a hard time finding manufacturers to develop this. For a custom patent product, where do you recommend to start?
Good question, Andrea. You already a step further by doing your 3D prototyping. So the material, you're talking about three different materials. I will start with first having I hope you had an NDA with whoever you're working with. You should have your NDA with the factory, and with, you know, if you're using the sourcing company, you should have an NDA. That's number one. And number two is one has to really take a look at the product to find out. Maybe you take your prototype and test the prototype, the 3D printed prototype, test it to make sure everything is good before investing into mold. Because if something is wrong with the prototype, then something will be wrong with the manufactured product. So we will take the prototype and we'll source, first test the prototype to make sure everything is good before we go into mold making for mass production. But if you see your prototype, you're thinking of using a different material. Once your mold is done, they can pretty much use any material to make the actual product. So I think you're right. You're doing well already. But the next step will now be to test the prototype, your 3D printed. After you're successful and you know that everything is good to go, then you go into mold making. And there are tons of mold making companies in China that can help you. Sometimes the factories that we're going to use will have the mold making capacity, or they will have mold making partnership with another factory.
Yeah, and on that mold making side, I was at an event last year when we could go to events. Mm-hmm. And two people came up during one event and was talking about molds. And both of them got scammed. They got their product produced in China. One only had it through email. So they just said that it was their mold. It's their custom mold. They paid 30 grand for it. This other guy paid 40 something, and he only had it on his PO. So that never went on to the pro forma. So one of the things that you want to make sure that you do, Andrea, you might already know this, but make sure that you have this on a PO, and then the PO is in China, Chinese, as well as English. But you want to make sure that any of that information is then put onto a pro forma, okay? It's just your digital document saying that the company's agreed to go forward. But it's so important, especially on the Chinese side of things. And then you're protecting yourself. And Afalabi, you're 100%. The triple D or the triple N's, you want to make sure that you have that in an agreement going forward with anybody. Mm-hmm. So we got a little bit off base. And just want to go back, because we've got a really great way of negotiating between what you've taught me and kind of the things that we've come up with this hybrid. But now that you've got your supplier, you've gone there, you've maybe done some product development. Now it's negotiating on the product. Talk about that.
Okay. So when it comes to negotiation, I would say there are two types of pricing. The initial pricing you get, you reach out to a factory, they give you all the pricing, then you ask for samples, and then you go through samples, and after the sample is done, you eliminate some of the suppliers that you don't. You know, maybe the sample is very good, or maybe some issues, or the quality isn't the best. And then you talk about terms as well. I wouldn't advise you to start requesting for some very, very unrealistic trade terms, especially if you're just meeting a new supplier. Many people go there and say, oh, I want to pay 30% down, and then the rest I'm going to pay after the ship arrives in the U.S. or in Europe or whatever. I wouldn't advise that. You must always have a good relationship with your supplier before you get into that. Another thing we need to talk about when negotiating is you have to go into negotiation with a win-win at the back of your mind. Your supplier, you don't want to beat your supplier down. You have to make it look and feel that it's a win-win situation between you and your supplier. It's in it to make money as well. He has family, he has employees, he has factories, he has all those burdens to take care of. So the goal is not to beat him down that he doesn't make anything. And guess what? A Chinese supplier will never lose money. They will not lose money. And then another thing you have to consider when negotiating prices is to know when to stop beating down the price. People keep going down. Oh, a product, a supplier quoted you for $2.50 and you want to buy it for $1. That doesn't, unless you find this supplier on, you know, a drop shipping platform, not on sourcing platform, but you should be very realistic with your prices. Don't try to beat the supplier down in terms of how much you want to pay for a product, because it is partnership. See your supplier as partnership. You want to go into partnership with this factory. If you do it very well, if you take good care of all your suppliers, they can move mountains for you and they can do awesome, awesome things for you. So, Norm, I don't know.
I got one thing. All right. So I think we breezed over it really quick, but it's probably the most important point when we're negotiating. Mm-hmm. But first, hey, we have Tracy Ingram on. I don't know if everybody knows Tracy. I know Tracy. He's one of the top SEO guys in the business, and just saw his name pop up. So thank you, Tracy, for listening in. Andrea, I hope we were able to help you out. Tony, I'm just looking here. I've never really thought of using LinkedIn as a, you know what, I can read this, but my glasses are so bad. Kelsey.
Okay, so we actually got quite a few comments here. So Timmy is joining us again.
Hey, Timmy.
We've got, I don't know if, do you want to go through a couple of your
questions? I'll just go quickly through there, but I saw Tony's and he was talking about, this is kind of cool now that I got a little closer to the computer, about making contacts on LinkedIn. So I do that all the time. I work, I go out and try to make other forms of contact, but really not trying to source through LinkedIn. So that's a pretty good idea. I'm not sure who LinkedIn user is, but thank you for your comment. Timmy, you're back on. Thank you. And Amy, oh my gosh. Hi, Amy. Yeah.
All right, so first question?
Yep.
All right, so Leonard is saying, are there any countries outside of China that you would consider looking at to source a wooden product?
Vietnam.
Oh. Yeah, Vietnam's good. That's actually how I got, most people see the boat that's usually behind me, but not in here. But yeah, that's where there are a lot of wooden products coming from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're okay. All, yeah, definitely.
All right. Okay, next one is from Timmy. How do you go about talking to manufacturers, especially in the likes of China, where you have no link or source in order to eliminate the foreigner syndrome? There's also, he has one more question after that, so we can answer that.
Well, that one's a pretty simple one. You can try to go to a sourcing company, a sourcing agent, and work with them. A lot of the times, like within Honu, you would come to us. Our people would go out, represent you. They don't know that. We have Chinese sourcing agents that go out and negotiate. They basically think they're buying it on our behalf. And you don't have that foreigner profile. So that's one thing that you can do.
I think this is we got a couple more. So yep. Another one. The fraud stuff as well. It's scary. How do you avoid falling into this trap? What measures do you need to put in place looking at going to China myself post-COVID?
Well, if you're doing the Alibaba route, you can always, you know, put trade assurance on your product. Mm-hmm. You can see how many orders the person's processed. There's all sorts of filters within Alibaba that you can do to narrow it down to make sure that it's a good supplier. But having trade assurance on is probably the first thing. What's that?
Inspection.
Oh yeah, and inspection. So if you order an inspection, then your chances of the product having a problem, you could set the defect rate. You can, we did a podcast recently where we showed a skateboard and just how many little flaws there were. And, you know, it's better than, especially if anybody's listening from Amazon, these would have been one-star reviews because there was flaws. So we were able to go back, make sure that the manufacturer, we set a specific defect rate. And we also, what was acceptable on returns, and that would be applied against the next order. So there's things that you could do when you're negotiating that you don't really think of at the time. But let's go back. I just want to go back to the very first thing that I think we just skipped over. You never negotiate on the final product. I guess rule number one for me would be if you've got that plastic shoe stretcher, you are negotiating on the plastic shoe stretcher. You're not negotiating on the insert or the packaging.
Yep.
Then the plastic, once you go back and you sign off on your samples, and now there's a process, and it takes a bit of time, but now the client or the manufacturer has got time invested. He wants to set up, he wants to negotiate. So at that point, it's strictly do not add the packaging on. You can ask for a package price, but the reason I say this is because the manufacturer is not a packager. So mm-hmm. we'll go out, we'll do our own packaging, and then we'll come back. And typically we find that the packaging increases the cost by about 30 to 100% over what the cost that we would normally get, because the manufacturer is got to make a buck. So that's something that's very important. And same thing with the inserts. You know, you could get yours for pennies or half a penny, and you know they'll quote you 2.5 cents. So again, it just comes down to the manufacturer's got to make money too.
Yep.
So that's sort of where I wanted to talk about. That's one of the main areas where negotiating the finer skills, and even a designer. So if you're looking at perceived value, so when you're negotiating, a lot of the times you're not going to get that perceived value from just the manufacturer. I would, and I always have, invested in a package designer that knows the quality of the package, knows what to put on, not to overcrowd it, and you know to put the proper labeling on. And then what you've got is you might spend a bit more on the product or on the graphic artist, but in the overall scheme of things, it's already you've already taken that into account because your packaging is so inexpensive. And the other thing, so important when you're doing packaging, let's say you're doing anywhere from 250 to 1,000 units, your price is going to suck. Okay, packaging, especially if you're in 200 to 500 units, packaging companies in China, they don't even want to touch those orders. So you might get a price of $2 or $2.25. If you can bring it up to 2,500 or 5,000 or 10,000, what ends up happening is the price drops down to 79 cents or 55 cents. And you can easily, because the manufacturer is producing the product, typically they'll kit the product for you, add the insert, create the box, put the product in for free. It yep. hardly ever do. How many times does that happen that we have to pay extra for that? Not that often,
nope.
huh?
Nope.
And plus they store it, right? They'll store the extra box.
That's what I want to say. Because many people are afraid of ordering a lot of packaging because they were like, but I don't need it. No, you're going to need it. In order for you to bring the price down, instead of you ordering 250 packaging, why not go for 3,000 and let the manufacturer keep the rest for you? Until where you're going to need it. Where you need it, you can call for it.
Right. Exactly. And so now what ends up happening is you've got a product that you've probably saved 30% on. You've mm-hmm. negotiated with the manufacturer. You've already saved a little bit more. There's mm-hmm. so many other things that you can do to bring down the cost, but just in negotiating, that's one of the main things I would do. Now, the other thing that I think is so important right now, and we've talked about this for the last month or two, but changing your strategy. So typically people were paying 30 to 70%. It doesn't have to exist. The Chinese manufacturers are open to negotiations.
Yeah.
And probably the best time to do that is right at the time when you want to start the negotiation or just after the negotiations. So Afolabi, let's say that we've got a product that we've negotiated from the start. We've signed off on the sample. We've brought in our own packaging. Okay, so what are a few other things that we can negotiate on, or when should we finish the negotiations, let's say?
Well, before we get to when should we finish the negotiation, I think people need to also understand that the currency you're using to negotiate matters a lot. So when you're negotiating prices at the very beginning, I want you to go for RMB, which is the Chinese local currency. Do not do US dollars. Do RMB. And also, when you're negotiating, ask for ex-work prices, not FOB. FOB is way expensive. Ex-work, EXW, let me tell you the difference between the two. Ex-work just means that after your product has been done, you will take the responsibility of taking it from the factory to the port. But the difference between the FOB and ex-work pricing is a lot. It could be sometimes I've seen to be like $3,000-$4,000 just in difference. And in some to some 7-8-figure sellers, it could be $30,000-$40,000 in the negotiating in ex-work versus negotiating in FOB. Now, coming back to the time, when is the best time to negotiate your price? I believe we've used this trick over and over again. It is when the supplier has invested time into your product. Look at it this way. If you just reach out to a supplier today, the supplier doesn't know you. You haven't proven yourself to be serious to this supplier. He doesn't want to waste his time negotiating price back and forth to you. I see many new sellers do make this mistake all the time. They go on sourcing website. The first thing they ask is, what's your price? And after they get the price, then they start negotiating the price. The supplier is like, soon to look at you like, are you crazy? I haven't even given you samples. I don't even know what you want to do, and you're negotiating prices. So I would say the best time to negotiate your price is after you have seen the sample, you have made the supplier invest his time and energy into your product. As you're about to pull the trigger to place an order with the money in your hand, as you're about to say, I'm going to send the money tomorrow, that's when you negotiate your price. And now say, wait a minute. How about $2 instead of $2.50? Because other suppliers that I'm working with, they are agreeing to $2. Do you think you can match that price? The supplier knows you about a few hours from going to the bank to send him the money. In most cases, they agree, or you guys can meet in the middle somewhere, but that is the best time to negotiate your price.
Right. Sorry, frog in the throat. that's 100% correct. So, when the other thing that you want to make sure that happens is when you have that negotiated price and the sample, I just thought about this, Afolabi, but you want to make sure that you have on your PO that the product quality stays exactly the same as the production sample.
Yes.
Because what can happen is if you start to negotiate the price, the supplier, if you haven't got the production sample or the sample signed off, they can just, this screw, we can go to this type of screw, or we can go to this type of product. Mm. And I'll tell you, this happened to us. And some people have probably heard me talk about this, but we ordered these wipes. They're screen wipes, right? So they were wipes that came in from China. And we had containers coming in, and we had ordered these products time and time and time again. So we opened up the container, and our agent, Freddie the agent, I hate the man. So can I say that? But anyways, what he tried to do was to try to save like a fraction of a penny on, you know, the towel swabs that you have in the restaurant. Well, there's a micro, like there's a film on the inside. Well, what ended up happening is we didn't sign off on that film especially when we did the inspection. Mm-hmm. Guess what happened? He swapped it out with something that the alcohol absorbed through. The whole container was spoiled.
Wow.
So if we would have negotiated and had to sign off, that would never have happened. But because it didn't have to match the sample that we signed, the sample that we had in production, it was what I call paying our Amazon tax. It happens. And we ate it. There's nothing we can do. And that's on something else, just touching on that. So insurance, it's great to have, but you never get paid out. I mean, typically, I mean, we've seen so many times where, okay, I feel safe because I have insurance, but a lot of the times, depending on how it's worded or the company you're working with, well, unfortunately, the company we were working with, it didn't pay out. Mm. So we absorbed it. So I see that there's a few other questions here. Amy's got one here, Kels.
All right. Okay, so let's back it up a little bit. Yeah. We have got a couple tips. So Amy's one tip was, if you're sourcing small, is to see what packaging the manufacturer already has in stock that they might be willing to throw in, then upgrade your packaging later. We had a question from Leonard, actually, about sourcing in Vietnam. Do you have any tips on how to go about sourcing wooden products from Vietnam? There's not much information about that.
There is, apart from using a sourcing company, there is a Vietnam Trade Organization that you can link up with. They have a database of all the suppliers that are already pre-vetted for export. I don't know what they are. I can find it out and probably post it on the Facebook group or something. But there's a Vietnamese trade organization. It looks like KITA for Korea, but they have their own that you can. And I think they have a website you can go through. It's not as good as Alibaba. It's not that sophisticated, but one is to either go through a sourcing company. The second one is to go through the Vietnamese Trade Organization, and they'll link you up with the database of all the wood makers, and then you can take it from there.
Okay, great. I should also mention that Afalabi will be a monthly guest here, so everyone watching now, you can come back in another month too, and if you forget about any questions or you might want to like write them down just to remember for the next show too.
So Kels, it looks like there's a few questions here too. We usually stop at around 45 minutes. If what we can do is we can continue on for a few more minutes and answer these questions. And if you want to stick around, we have got a solid gold tip, the number one tip that we use for negotiating. So let's just get these done and then we'll get into that.
Okay. So I think these are more tips too from Amy and Tony. So Amy is saying, yes, first just have a discussion, vet the supplier, validate they have the products and quality you need and they are a good partner for you. Then have a more serious discussion and negotiate to determine if you can grow with them. And so Tony is saying, guys, packaging is important. I always get amazing hand takes where possible. I prefer dealing with vendors, always dealing my competitors already. And then I think we have another question from Leonard.
Oh, but Tony, just remember, if you're going there and you can see their product, they can see your product.
See your product too. They'll sell your product too.
And I think our last question here right now is, with first orders, would you try and get better payment terms than 30 to 70? I have tried getting 20 to 80, but a few suppliers have looked at me funny when I asked about it.
Okay, so Afalabi, you want me to take this on the inventory strategy? Okay. So we have seen that a lot of suppliers are changing. So you could either get, typically it's, you could put 30% down, 70, you know, when it's completed. Or we're starting to see more along the line of either 20 when completed, and then even giving terms. It's not hard to get terms nowadays. One of the things that you can do is you could just tell them that the reason why you need the terms is that, especially going into Q4, is you need the marketing dollars to help market and just navigate the, you know, it's much harder to navigate in Amazon. We're trying to get your sales. You're our supplier. You're the one getting the sales, and we need these to help with our cash flow. The other thing that you can do is just open that discussion. But the other thing that you can do is this whole inventory cycle. So I know Amy's already heard me talk about this, but it's taking your product. It's what you would negotiate is you'd have a discussion with your supplier. Say, look, I need you to send 500 units to my warehouse, 500 units over to Amazon, and then double up what you normally would, have 1,000 units in your warehouse already there, pre-made for me. You'll be surprised how many will do it. You'll be surprised at how many will just say, okay, give me 20% or give me 30% like you normally would. But what this does is it makes sure that you have product for a fourth quarter. So once you start, the trigger would be once you send over your first 500 units over to Amazon, once you get down on the, once it starts to get down to your inventory alert, send over from your 3PL, which triggers a shipment coming over from the Chinese warehouse. The Chinese warehouse, as soon as it sends it over, they put it into production. Now, we have seen that some, and I, a very expensive one too, by the way, it were knives that they did this for free. They did it for free. Others, we have to pay something to. Sometimes it's 20%, sometimes it's 30%. But almost every time that we've negotiated this, we've been able to go from 30-70 to 30% for the order. Then it would be 70% on 70% 30 days. And just to give you an example, if you ask, one of the most expensive products we have are these knives, and they've been able to have 90-day terms, which last year it was 70-30. And nothing fancy, we just asked. So that's something to keep in mind when you're negotiating, because that'll save you a ton of money. We do have another question here. I can't read it.
From Jack. So yeah, Jack has two questions. So number one, is it good to renegotiate the price on the second order? How would you go about doing it?
What do you think?
Well, some suppliers may accept and some may not. How would you go about doing it? I would say if your first run is good, if it's a new supplier, it may be a little harder. Mm-hmm. But if it is an existing supplier you have a relationship with, yeah, they would work with you. Right, Norm?
Yeah, I agree. It really comes down to, did the product move? Because a lot of the times people are going to go in and they're going to say, hey, this is a test order. I'm a big Amazon seller, blah, 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 blah. Everything you learn in these courses. Mm-hmm. And then you perform and you actually do what you say you're going to do. Now you come back and you say, oh, I want, instead of 500 units, I want 1,500 units. Now you're going to be bumped up into another price point. The other thing is the whole COVID play, because it is tougher. Okay, we have to work with Amazon. We have the ability. We've never experienced the Prime Day and the Black Friday in the same quarter. So these are things that you could use to help leverage yourself to make sure that they work with you. Again, you can ask. I love using this. I call it the circle of life. You know, just making sure that the product is always in stock, ready for that second order. So if you can get the supplier to build that confidence in you, great. The other thing to remember is that inventory does not have to be hard on your cash flow. There are tons of funding sources out there right now. I know Helium 10 has one, I think what's it, Alta or something like that, but they will help with relieve your cash flow if you check them out. Seller Funding has one. There's other companies out there that have this. And so you can use that to your advantage as well. But mm-hmm. Unless there's any other questions, this is a bonus part. Yep.
All right, we got one more, then we'll get to the bonus.
Okay.
So Jack, again, last one. So yeah, that's it for the questions from the audience. So we'll be wrapping up shortly. So do you source in USA since there's a push to bring some manufacturing back to USA?
Yes. Sure. Yes, we do. Unknowingly to many people, US is probably one of the best places to source products for many reasons. So while you're waiting for your ship to come from China in 30 days, you place an order in the US in like a week, it's ready. And then many people will fund the order with their credit card because most US manufacturers will accept credit cards as orders. But yes, it's very, very, even Canada is another good one, Norman. Canada is a really good place to place order, I mean, to source products. And Canada is rising in so many good products, especially in the cosmetics, in yeah. A supplement. They're rising to be a very, very good. They have pure, very pure and very good all-natural ingredients that come from Canada. So yes, US and Canada is rising. The only issue with many factories before, two issues. There's no easy sourcing platform for US manufacturers, and it breaks my heart. What if we can have an Alibaba type of platform for US manufacturers? It could have been perfect. So that's one downside. The other downside is some manufacturers in the US are kind of a little greedy in the sense that, hey, look, I'm buying this product in China for 50 cents. The cost of production in the US is maybe 40 cents. Could you at least sell it to me for 75 cents? I'm willing to pay 60 cents. I'm willing to pay 75 cents. No, they tell you, no, we want $1.50. Look, I'm ordering 1 million pieces from you. If you can just at least drop down on your price a little bit, because the quality is better, but I know with the new thing going on now, a lot of the US manufacturers are starting to come down on their prices, and US is becoming more and more a top contender in manufacturing.
Yeah, and then you have the Trump tax too, so you've got that 25%. Yeah. So that, I mean, that helps level the playing field a little bit.
Yeah.
So you know, when you start talking HTS codes, I mean, they can end up being quite high. So that's another bonus. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about our secret weapon. So like you said at the very beginning, and I'm glad you said it, it has to be a win-win. When you first hear what we're going to tell you, you're going to think that we're taking advantage, and we are absolutely not taking advantage. We know when to stop. And I think that's what Alpha Lobby's got to talk to you about. But it's something that we've been using for a long time. I've done it for years before I met Alpha Lobby. But at the end of the day, Alpha Lobby, why don't you just talk about this tip?
Awesome. Thanks. So many people ask us, what if at the very end, remember we talked about you negotiating your prices at the end of the process whereby you're about to make a payment to your supplier? What if your supplier says no? What if they don't accept your pricing? What do? A product is there. The supplier is quoting you $2.50, and you came back with a price and said, hey, if you take $2, you know, I'll buy it. And the supplier says no. What do you do in that situation? And that comes a secret weapon. You do nothing. You just go silent. Really? Yeah. Just go silent. Don't reply your supplier. Don't say anything. Once you tell them what you want to pay and they say no, don't reply that message anymore. Just go silent, dead silent. When you do that, you know what's going on. The supplier will also be waiting for you to talk. Day one, day two, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, don't say nothing. Resist the temptation of either contacting him or replying him. Just be silent. By the time it's over a week and your supplier doesn't hear from you, he's going to start messaging you and negotiating against himself. When he's doing that, say no. Just don't say nothing. Maintain your silence. Don't say anything. I know it feels weird, but we use it all the time. When you're silent, what you're doing is you're getting your supplier to negotiate against himself. When you're silent enough, before you know it, by the end of 6, 7, 8 days, your supplier starts to say, okay, how about $2.10? How about $2.25? How about $2.05? How about $2.25, $2.15?
I went back to my manager and he said, we see that a lot. Yep. Oh, we've talked about the material and we did. Hey, Afolabi, there was a time when I had a product and I just decided not to do anything, right? Uh-huh. So the manufacturer was emailing me. And again, I just was ignoring it because I just was going to get it, like talk to them a bit later about it. And over a period of, I don't know if it was 6 weeks to 2 months, mm-hmm. they came down 25%.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that think you're taking advantage of, you know, it's not a win-win. No, like Afolabi said, the Chinese suppliers will never get into the win. Once it starts to go to the negative, into the red, you won't hear back from them. Mm-hmm. So the thing, when you know the sweet point is there, is actually when that happens, right? So mm-hmm. as soon as they start to, that's it. So I've come down 15 or 20%, then you know that that's it. Then you know that that's where their real price is.
Yes.
And then you can go in and accept it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because like Amy said, everybody's happy. Your supplier says, okay, all right, I'll give you this price. This is the price I can live with and still be successful and still be able to pay and still be able to make profit. You win, he wins. Take that deal and don't play games. Because once they give you that deal, after the silence period is over, they give you that deal, you're happy, they're happy, take that deal and run. Don't try to come back again and say, okay, all right, resist that. It's a win-win situation. They'll take good care of you. You also take good care of them. But silence, like Amy says, silence always wins. We use it every time. It works and works and works.
All right. Well, we are at the longest point ever in a Lunch with Norm. So thank you for everybody for sticking by. Afolabi, do you have any final words, any tips, anything else on negotiating?
I think we covered it all. We covered pricing, we covered terms, we covered quality. If they have anything, they can shoot us or contact me, send an email or some, or go to honorworldwide.com and shoot us an email, or savings@honor.com, savings@honorworldwide.com. Anything you want to do, we'll be able to help you out.
Amy's got a great one here. Just moved up. Where is it, Kels?
I love leaving the table telling them I know they are going to work hard to meet my target price. I leave it in their hands. I don't feel the need to close the deal at the table at the time.
There was one other that I just saw from her.
It's great to remind them that you want them to also win. Great tip, guys. Thanks for another great show.
Oh, you're very welcome. And there's something from Jack.
Jack. Is there a formula in negotiating price? Like if they gave you a quote for $5, is dropping 20% the average?
I start at 30. So if they give me a price of, let's say the price is $1, I start at 70. Or I break it into three for 66% or 67%, knowing that maybe at the end of the day, we might meet at 75.
Yeah. And again, everybody's got to be happy. If they're not, then they're not going to want to work with you. And the other is so important to make sure that you have a sample signed off, because you don't want the switch. Mm. And Andrea, thank you. Just, I think Afolabi's got his contact information, and I think that's it. So yeah. Thank you, Afolabi. This has been great.
You're welcome. It's as usual. I enjoyed the show.
But you have to. You have to be biased.
Oh, it's actually cool. I'm having fun.
All right, everybody. So thank you for joining us today. And I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast. If you have any questions, you could reach out to Afolabi. All his information is going to be on the site. We'll be posting the whole episode along with shorter clips on Norm Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy. And we'll have a few clips and snippets on our YouTube channel. You can find it at Norm Farrar. So everything will be uploaded later on today. Kelsey, Squire.
I'm back. Yeah, thanks for watching, everyone. If you haven't yet, hit those like buttons. Also, if you're following or if you're watching this from the Norman Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy page, please just like and follow the page. You'll get the updates when we go live immediately, so you don't miss anything. I'll be posting events for the Lunch with Norm. It's kind of new. So you can go to our event page on the Facebook page. And you can press the interested button or the an RSVP. Yeah, and then follow us on social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. You can find us on the Lunch with Norm website up here, or listen to us as a podcast on Apple Podcast, Spotify Podcast. And I think that's everything. I'll post the Honu worldwide information in the comments too.
And I am very excited to have Ken Kubrick on our Wednesday show. So Ken is going to be talking about Amazon businesses and what to look for when acquiring them. So how you can set them up. But just a little fact about Ken, he works with Thoresso, and they're the fastest growing company ever to hit $1 billion. So this guy knows his stuff. I can't wait. I've bumped into him, but we've never really talked at any of the events, but it's going to be a good one. So anyways, tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon Central Time. Why? I always say Central Time. I live in Eastern Standard Time. So Eastern Standard Time. And please feel free to post your questions afterwards. We'll get back to you as fast as we can. And thank you again, everybody, for joining us for Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Micro Brands. Enjoy the rest of your day. Lunch with Norm.